Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now it's time for our weekly gathering and we're going to take a look at the main stories and events of the week. Joining me in the studio, we've Peter Burke, Minister of State for Local Government and Planning and Fine Gael TD for Longford West Meath. Richard Boyd Barrett is here too, People Before Profit TD for Dunleary. And on the line we have Larissa Nolan, Irish Independent columnist. You're all very welcome. Thank you for being with us. Will we start with hotel quarantine, because that's the big one today. It feels like everyone is coming at us, Peter Burke, on this one. We've the Italian ambassador, French residents here, the EU Commission, Nigerian residents representatives. I think it was only the Brazilians who agreed that Ireland's mandatory hotel quarantine system was the right one to use. Are we on a sticky wicket, do you think, with the whole setup?
I don't think so. I think it's going to be a temporary measure when we're going through this process of getting our vaccinations to a very high level.
I just don't get how it could be a temporary measure.
Well, I think for anyone listening in would know that Ireland is a very small open economy. It survives on trade and dealing outside of with other countries. And that's one of the key indicators that we need to be sure that it's not a long-term measure. Because if it was, we would feel the effects in terms of our public service, in terms of our infrastructure, and it would affect our economy.
Yeah, so but if it's there to control variants, how could it only be a temporary measure?
Well, obviously, when we get everyone vaccinated, and that's key, and I think the CDC and the US have got exceptional data over the last week or so, and Dr. Fauci has been very strong on that, the protection that a vaccination gives you, and in terms of how the disease progresses. So hopefully, if they do work as prescribed, and we can update vaccines into the future in terms of booster shots, etc., that we will get it under control. But I think, you know, there is issues with it, and, you know, there's very simplistic issues going around saying, oh, we should have more hotel beds. This isn't about beds, it's a full system, and hotel beds is only one piece of the jigsaw in this complex system. Mm-hmm. So hopefully the portal will be back up again by the weekend. I think that's very important, but it is a government decision and we're working very hard to implement.
Okay, you'll need your headphones there to hear Larissa, but before we come to Larissa, Richard Boyd Barrett, do you think the government made a mess of hotel quarantine? I mean, there's so many exemptions now, people heading off to the courts, the beds not enough, the system, booking system had to be shut down. What do you make of it?
The government resisted doing it when it was necessary to do it. And we have to do it. It's horrible. But we have to do it because we don't want a fourth wave. I mean, the biggest disaster possible is a fourth wave at every level. In terms of fatalities, in terms of the economic, social damage, we have to prevent that happening.
And even though you have to curtail civil liberties.
Yeah, and one thing I will say, okay, is we need mandatory quarantine to stop a fourth wave. But we need really proper standards and we need to protect human rights in quarantine. I mean, I was talking to somebody who's out there at the moment. He's paid his €1,800, he accepts he has to be in quarantine, but he said he can't get in touch with the state liaison officer. He was waiting 5 hours for a bottle of water. His family, who brought a care package in, which were supposed to be allowed, got a lot of hassle from the quarantine authorities. He can't get out. It's 3 days before he got out for a fresh air break.
Come on. You're supposed to get out a number of times a day.
Exactly. Unbelievable stuff, right? So okay, they made a mess of it.
We'll have to check that.
And part of it is because it's outsourced to private for-profit companies rather than being run by the health authorities. It should be run by the health authorities.
But the health authorities have enough to be doing now than to be taking people out for
It's a health
breaks.
Measure. It's a public health measure. It's not it's not about a commercial interest, and that's the problem.
So you think we should buy half the hotels in Dublin to run this?
No, I think we need public health teams, properly staffed, all over the country. They're at a third of the levels that they should be. And we need public
and we've
health
had a huge
officials
announcement on that yesterday
running
as well.
The well, quarantine system.
I think the key thing is that when we move to the green digital strategy in terms of the passports for European-wide travel, it's important we do move there because we have to look at what Europe is doing, what the ECDC are saying, what the WHO are saying, and this will be a temporary measure for us because we need to unlock our economy again and our potential, and hopefully with the vaccine rollout we will achieve that.
And Larissa, do you think, as somebody who's watching this play out, that the mandatory quarantine system is working and that it's fair?
No, I don't think it's working or it's fair. And actually, there was a guy who was on one of the RTE News Vox Pops the other night, I think, who summed it up in a brilliantly kind of new goo-boo way when he said, he was asked what he thought of it, and he said, ridiculous, a waste of time, too late, and utterly pointless. And I think that I couldn't do better than describe it the way he did there. We've had a constant stream of, there's been constant problems with it all week since it started. People weren't supposed to come in without pre-bookings. They didn't have the bookings, and then they come in, and then the hotels get overrun, as anybody who worked in the hotel industry said that would happen. This has been too late. It should have been done if it was going to be done, or if it was justifiable even. It would have been justifiable last week. I disagree with Richard. I don't think it is justifiable even now, even in the current situation. I think civil liberties has become very unfashionable thing to stand up for lately from all parties for some reason. It's almost like a dirty word at this stage. But it should be noted that both the Attorney General and the Irish Council for Civil Liberties raised concerns about this in the month or two ahead of it being brought in. Mm-hmm. And the Irish Council for Civil Liberties called it an affront to democracy. It highlighted numerous problems.
But we can't afford, we don't have anything close to the majority of our population vaccinated, and we won't have for some number of months. So we have to do something to avoid that fourth wave, as Richard Boyd Barrett said there. We just can't take the risk, can we?
Well, no, I don't think that this at this point is the correct solution. I think there are other solutions or other ways about it that we could manage it. I think rapid testing and regular testing that's being completely rolled out, mass rolled out in the UK, is a tool that we're not using here at all, and we should be using it, and it would be more effective and it would cause less harms on the balance than what we're doing now. We've just gone down a completely draconian route, and it's about time that somebody else outside this country noticed that. And I'm actually very glad that the European Commission have brought it up, because it's about time that it was highlighted on a European stage.
Are you worried, Peter, that we might be in trouble now with the EU Commission over this? We'd be the bad boys now again of Europe for this one.
No, I think we have to engage with them, and obviously we've taken this decision based on our own public health advice. But one key thing I think here is when you hear people saying it is too late, like, are people seriously suggesting in this country that the B117 UK variant would not have got in if we had mandatory hotel quarantine, having a porous border and looking at the interaction we have with the UK?
But then why are we doing it at all?
That's absolutely ridiculous. We're trying to stop Brazilian variants and a South African variant, which are much more potent in terms of dealing with the vaccine. But once we get through that, and that's the key, it is timely and we will get through it, but it's a temporary measure and we must integrate into the European system then, because there are huge risks attached to this.
But I think that's contradictory, Peter, what you're saying. You're contradicting yourself, because if it's going to come down through the border in the beginning, it's going to come down now, surely.
I'm talking about the UK one would have, but obviously with the Brazilian one and the South African one, we will reduce the risk of those coming in.
And we're coming from anywhere. Amsterdam.
We're now sequencing 25%, that's a quarter of all positive cases. And that's a huge ramp up of public health to protect our citizens, so we can track and trace this very quickly if it does get in.
You say everybody should be subject to mandatory hotel quarantine.
I think, yes, anywhere where there's high levels of circulation of the virus or variants, we have to, because otherwise all the hardship and effort that people have undergone through the lockdown will just be for nothing if we have another wave.
And what do you think of the exemptions, the elite athletes now, that's been signed today, that they will be exempt, people who are fully vaccinated, that's likely to happen over the next couple of days, other exceptions too?
Yeah, it's tricky. I think the default position should be not to have exemptions, but it is tricky, because I understand that one of the few things that's keeping people sane is being able to watch sport at the moment. I wouldn't go to war on that particular issue, but I think in general, we need to ensure that we don't import variants, or we don't allow the back door to be open, in order, which then undermines all the huge effort and hardship that people have gone to try and drive down.
And do we know enough about the efficacy of the vaccines against variants and transmission in order to be able to say that everybody who's fully vaccinated can go and quarantine by themselves?
I think we have to ask the scientists that. I mean, I would like to think that if people are vaccinated, that could be the passport to travel again and to reopening. We all want that, right? But I mean, to be honest, we have to be led by the science on that. But some of the signs are good. But one thing I will say, and I think this is hugely important, is we are going to have a problem as long as the majority of the world's population are not being vaccinated. And here the issue of the People's Vaccine Campaign to lift the patent restrictions on the vaccine technology and share it is a huge problem in terms of limiting the production of vaccines generally. And we need that. And it's disgraceful that the Irish government and the European Union have backed the big pharma companies in resisting that move to lift intellectual property and patent restrictions, which if they were lifted, would actually allow us to boost up the production of vaccines on a global level.
Is he right? Is that what the Irish government has done?
Well, I think, first of all, we need to work to ensure the whole world is vaccinated, absolutely, and work with the World Health Organization. And the US are doing that. They're actually to the forefront of it, because they suggested that the developing countries would get a significant proportion of vaccines because it's a pandemic. But the idea that Richard is saying here, you know, all of a sudden that, oh, generally I might exempt these and I might do that, the opposition called in totality for every country to be on this list. They said the virus does not differentiate between essential and non-essential travel. That's a very draconian, harsh measure. Now we're seeing the humanitarian issues, the legal issues and the political issues. And that's why this is a complex system. So we do need patience to work through it rather than be critical of it every step of the way.
Well, actually, just to be absolutely clear, we tried to amend the legislation in order to ensure that it was the health officials who were running it rather than for-profit outsourcing, which is what the government insisted on, which they've done, by the way, on a whole range of levels, outsourcing recruitment for the testing and tracing to CPM.
No, just go back to his point, though. You can't pick and choose, because you said, oh, I like sport and people like sport, so, you know, let the athletes.
No, I didn't.
Through.
I said I wouldn't go to war on it, but to be honest, I don't think we should have exceptions. And I think some of the exceptions that we have, like politicians and so on, shouldn't be there. Right. So I think the key thing is we have to stop another wave. Right. And we have to take the measures, because then we can reopen. And part of the problem is that the government, 70 to 80% of the population endured the lockdown, but the government let certain sectors continue to operate, even though they were non-essential. And that is the reason why this lockdown has been so protracted. The point is to get out of lockdown.
Are you still advocating zero COVID then, where you would basically not have to breathe not to spread the virus? We've never had zero community transmission in this country.
I tell you what I'm advocating, Peter, is that we don't repeat the mistakes that you made in December when you were warned not to open certain sections of the economy and the result is that we had a four-month lockdown. And we said your policy would lead
not.
To long and protracted lockdowns and bigger economic
Richard,
damage, and that's what's happened.
You published a 22-page document on zero COVID.
Absolutely.
Which would mean our schools would be closed, all our businesses would be closed.
No, they'd be open.
We would have no hope.
They'd be open.
No, because you said we would have zero community transmission.
Peter,
we have
Peter,
never had
Do you know
zero
in Australia they've never closed the schools?
And
do you know that?
With the B117
you know
variant, we would never have.
The schools were never closed again, in Australia because they have
the
zero
The Australian
COVID.
Argument. So how are we like Australia? We have a porous border. We're very connected on the epicentre of COVID in terms of the waves that have come across. New Zealand and Australia are totally different cases, and it's totally illogical to compare them. It shows you how little you know about COVID when you do that.
Larissa, do you want to come in there on this? Because we're back to that zero COVID argument again. But with the mandatory hotel quarantine in place now, we sort of have a foot in both camps, would you say?
Yeah, well, that's what it seems like, is that we've half done both things, which is completely useless. In fact, worse than useless, which is the worst of all. I would tend to agree with Peter on that case about zero COVID. I think there seems to be two sides of the extremes where you have kind of the zero COVID. Sometimes you see the zero COVID camps, and then you have the people who are saying, you know, lift everything up and let it all go. And I think most people, if you talk to them, want more measured response than we've had here in Ireland, because we do have to accept. I think a lot of people don't realise that we've spent I think 5.5 months of the last 6 months. In complete lockdown, which makes us the most restricted country, developed country or free country certainly in the world. One of the only countries ahead of us is Eritrea, which is the subject of international human rights in relation to repressive government. So we have an extremely restricted regime here. I think we all know that we're the most restricted in the EU. There are other countries that are managing to keep the levels around the same as ours, and the unfortunate deaths around the same as ours, but they don't have to. They haven't locked down to the extreme degree that we have, that has caused these huge social and economic harms. You know, so if you look at other countries across Europe, they accept that people will, for example, need to get their hair cut, or they accept that.
But look at where our numbers are. You know, down all of that good news from the NPHET press conference last night.
That's only taken at a particular snapshot in time. And I think it might have been actually the WHO who originally warned against lockdowns as a policy, saying that what happens is kind of the longer you lock down, then the more you bounce back up again. But if you look at those rates all the way across,
I don't think they warned against lockdowns now. They were very nuanced about that. I remember having that conversation here on the programme, and I was told
time and time again that they
were very upset, that David Nabarro was very upset that what he said was being characterised as though the World Health Organization were against lockdowns.
They said it was part of a suite of measures
that should be taken.
No, what they said was to be using it as an emergency and not as a strategy for all the time to use it.
Okay. Does your point relate then to testing and tracing and all of that, and going back 2 weeks to find out the source of cases and outbreaks?
Well, we should know where they're coming from. I mean, that's a basic thing. There's no point in halfway doing it. It'd be like getting one vaccination and not getting the second one. You know, there's no point in half doing anything. So if it takes a week or two to find out where the source of that infection came from, well, we should be doing the extra, I think it's only an extra couple of minutes, 10 or 15 minutes, to find that extra information. I do think that should be prioritised. Yes, I think that the testing and tracing are key tools in this, and I really don't understand why we haven't embraced the level of testing that, for example, I mentioned earlier on in the EU, where when children were going back to schools, all families with children in school got tests to test everyone in the household twice a week. That would have been a really reassuring thing for the school community, including teachers and pupils.
Can we move on and talk about vaccines now? The Irish Independent today, Peter Burke, saying that there won't be vaccines for the under-60s until the end of June. Is that right?
I would expect there will be. Obviously, we're dependent on supply, and that's the key thing. I can't exactly say here when supply will come in and what level it will come in. But the key thing is that the government or the system, the HSE, has got the vaccines out immediately when they've come in. And you cannot ask for any more than that. The key thing is we want to increase supply, and we are faced with complications in an international supply chain. Europe has had its problems with that, but we're doing our very best to get as many out as quickly as possible.
Where did I read today? I think it was Mark Paul, actually, from yesterday, who said we're prepared to go out on our own when it comes to mandatory quarantine, like out away from the EU system. But when it comes to finding vaccines, we stick to the protocol.
But they're not there.
There's vaccines in Russia. The Cubans are developing vaccines. Why aren't you talking to those people?
They have to be approved. If the vaccine was approved by the European Medicines Authority and our own HPRA,
but are they even working on it? Are they even working on it, Peter? Seriously,
I understand they are.
Yeah, they're taking their time, but they have to be approved first.
That's the key thing. And there is no vaccines behind the couch that people haven't just got, and we can go off on our own and get them.
Peter, we really are so far behind. Even Boris Johnson, and I have no time for Boris Johnson, right? But Boris Johnson has actually managed to do a better vaccine rollout than we have.
6% of
the north of this country has done a far better job.
Because they've done a different...
And as a result, they're able to reopen, right?
But in the context of Europe, we're doing quite well, because when we get them, as Peter says, we get them into the arms.
And secondly...
In the context, Europe in general is not doing very well.
Yeah, I know, we're in the gang. We said we're in the gang. We signed up to it. We're adhering to the protocol.
And
when we get them, we give them.
And the European Union gang has essentially gone along with the big companies in restricting the patent and technology and intellectual property rights, right? To protect the profits of certain companies rather than actually share the technology for producing vaccines to be able to produce them, because there's huge capacity to produce vaccines on a global level that is not being utilised at the moment, because certain companies do not want to share the technology because it would cut
Peter
into their profits.
The UK have only 6% of their population have got the second dose. They have decided on a different strategy. We stuck with the ECDC recommendation and our own health experts to ensure that the most vulnerable people now in our society, those over 70s, those in healthcare, they are fully vaccinated.
Two shots.
I wouldn't be putting down the UK's vaccine rollout compared to our own, because I was surprised to find out this morning, actually it was only this morning I found out, that about approximately 90% of people in the UK, I didn't realise it was that high a statistic, have received their first vaccine. Now, we know they do that because they believe that it gives some form of immunity and it's better than none. And I have to say, I think that I've been very impressed by their rollout, and I think Richard was right to give Boris a grudging nod of respect there for that.
I'm not sure about that 90% figure? Because they're vaccinating people in their, they're only vaccinating people in their 40s now, inviting them for...
I looked at this 11 hours ago from BBC News, and they're up in the, they're up in an average of around 90% for all three of the countries, late 80s and early 90s for Scotland, Wales and England. So I was stunned to find that this morning.
We'll have a look at that. You yourself are vaccine hesitant. Is that the right way to describe you?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, like, you know, look, we all have to do what we have to do to get through this thing, and there's nothing worse than lockdown. I think it was one of the Scottish comedians was saying, you know, I'd take a shot of anything at this stage to get out of it. But certainly I'm probably one of, I think it's about one third of people have described themselves as vaccine hesitant, which the way I describe it, Claire, is this is a new vaccine for a new virus. And I think anybody, if you're thinking through it properly, or if you're a critical thinker, you would have hesitancy around getting it into your arm. I'm sure
Even though the European Medicines Agency says that this vaccine has gone through all of the same processes and tests as any other vaccine would have gone through, that nothing has been skipped on the path to approval.
I think the way I put it is this, is, you know, if I was to be guaranteed that I could come through COVID safely, obviously nobody can guarantee that, and that's a pipe dream, but I think I'd actually prefer then, in that case, to get it naturally than to get the vaccine. And I think perhaps I'm just being a hippie around issues like that, but I know that it's the people who are vaccine hesitant are more likely to be women, they're more likely to be poor, and they're more likely to be non-Irish. So there's a kind of particular category there.
And women are more likely to suffer from long COVID, as we heard on the programme yesterday. The problems that we've had, Peter Burke, with AstraZeneca, though, are adding to that cohort of people who are a little bit nervous now about this.
Absolutely. And it has been highlighted so much now, the risk from COVID, it's so greater than the risk from the vaccine. And that's key why it's been targeted at those age groups where the scientists, looking at the evidence, have recommended that it is safe to use in those categories. And that's why they're doing that. Mm-hmm. So this is our only key out of this pandemic, our vaccines. So we really have to encourage people, get confidence in them. And we have total independence in our medical authorities. That's one thing we've done in this country. When NIAC took a recommendation, we absolutely implemented it to the letter of the law.
Okay, and just to say that the European Medicines Agency on the clotting events with the low platelet counts, they say they're a very rare side effect, estimated to occur between 4 and 10 times in every 1 million people vaccinated, and the risk of death is only 1 in a million. And we know that the risk of death from blood clotting from when somebody's taking the contraceptive pill is higher. Larissa, you're not convinced.
Sorry, no, I'm a bit out of tune here with being on the phone line, Claire. Sorry about that. No, I think these are the risks that go along with these things. And, you know, as I was saying earlier on, it being a new virus and it being the fastest ever developed, I think we all accept that, like with all vaccines, there may be some very serious and fatal side effects. I think that's the case with all of them. Certainly when I had to go to Africa and I had to get all my jabs for that, I know that I was warned of side effects that could possibly happen. So I think we may have to move forward.
But you took them anyway.
I took them anyway. Yeah, of course. Like, you know, I'm fully vaccinated and think they're one of the greatest public health achievements. But
all
I do
right.
think we have to accept that there will be some safety issues there. While the pharmacovigilance shown by the government in relation to this, I think, has been some reassurance to a vaccine hesitant.
Okay, let's move on, because the lifting of the 5 kilometre rule in the past week means that landlords will be able to resume eviction proceedings against tenants from the 23rd of April. Is it the right time, Peter Burke, to resume evictions now?
Well, first of all, we've had a strong look at this. We've put in 4 pieces of legislation, and it's not that there is mass evictions here. What we have is we have legislation in now, going by threshold, going by the RTB, and also listening to other actors in the housing market, that if anyone is suffering in terms of rent arrears from COVID, they can be protected up until the 12th of July. That is there in place to protect those who are vulnerable that are in tenancies. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the market, there's 300,000 private tenancies currently in operation. Around 700 of the 300,000 got a termination notice, and half of that was protected under the current bill. That's throughout the pandemic.
Okay.
So there is significant
there.
Protections there, and you have to balance the common good as well with that in terms of the pandemic.
Try telling that to the tenants in St. Helens Court in Dunleary, who now have less than a week before they're going to be evicted. They are tenants who've lived in that complex for decades in many cases, their pensioners, their families, their people with kids, and a vulture fund has told them within 10 days of the lifting of the 5 kilometre rule, they're going to be evicted. And I made this point repeatedly to the Minister for Housing that vulture funds and other corporate landlords were going to move in and evict tenants who've done absolutely nothing wrong, who pay their rent and are evicted because you have refused to protect tenants because you're dancing to the tune of big landlords.
Quick word in response and then we'll have to move on then. Yeah.
Absolutely, we have to go by the advice from the Attorney General. He said that it is only constitutional to link it to the 5k limit, but when the limit increases beyond that, it's not. Okay. So we have to go by that advice.
Just on the vaccination of the UK population, over 90% of over 50s have had their first
over
dose.
Over 50s,
And it's important to get these things right, and over 60% overall of the UK adult population. We have to leave that there now. Peter Burke, Richard Boyd Barrett, Larissa Nolan, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Today with Clare Byrne. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.